The attempt to create an anti-bolting statute, is it a good idea? The governor's automatic tax refund is removed from the state budget. Will it be revived? Charlie's Law, school vouchers, a new effort to defund Planned Parenthood, a pair of big-time lottery winners, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Republicans won a series of partisan battles in the state Senate. It begins with the creation of an anti-bolting statute. It's the GOP answer to the five-week walkout conducted by Democrats in the Indiana House. The Democrats are being fined $250 a day for the time they spent at a hotel in Urbana, Illinois. But the Republicans want to prevent a similar walkout in the future. Nevertheless, they put a provision in the state budget that could lead to taxpayer lawsuits and $1,000 a day fines after just 3 days. Democrats objected.
Are we going to allow the courts to decide if members of the General Assembly should be disciplined for their actions, legislative actions? Because that's exactly what we're doing here. Let the voters decide that when the time comes.
Does an anti-bolting statute make sense? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, State House Bureau Chief for the Louisville Courier-Journal, and John Ketzenberger, President of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, do Republicans have no fear of returning to the minority?
I don't think that's what's driving this in any way, shape, or form, if that's where you're headed on this line of questioning. So, I think Senator Long summed this up very well in his remarks on the floor during this debate, when he said that we can't allow this kind of a long-term walkout to become a commonplace in the Indiana General Assembly. This did really hurt the process, and I think 5 weeks was just beyond the pale for most folks, and they want to make sure it doesn't happen again. And as he said, there was a similar law in the books between the 1860s and 1976, and we didn't have a walkout during that whole time, so apparently it worked, but... I think this language will be tweaked when it put it in a House bill, has a whole lot of other stuff in it.
The budget.
Not this part. Okay. It'll be tweaked when it gets over to the House because there is going to be a conference committee on the budget. But, we'll see. But I think it's going to actually pass.
I don't spend much time over there. I knew it was in the budget.
Yeah. Might Democrats walk out again to try to prevent an anti-bolting statute from becoming law?
Well, you'd have to ask Pat Bauer that, not me, but,
You're the guy who foots the bill, aren't you?
No, the unions do.
No, yeah. To answer your question, since Mike didn't, clearly, with a lot of examples this week, there's no fear of returning to the minority, or they'd be careful on the overreach that they're doing. This one here it raises some serious constitutional issues. Brian Bosma said that himself. Do we really want the courts to get involved every time there's a caucus? For the party that supposedly doesn't like trial lawyers, you might be giving them a lot of business.
There's clearly an effort here to punish the Democrats. Do you understand that?
Are you asking me whether I understand that or whether I agree with that?
Let's start with understand.
Yes, they are trying to punish the Democrats, or in this case, the minority party. And some people may think that the fines that have already been levied against the representatives is punishment enough. So you might be seeing this as piling on. But there is a constitutional question here because the state constitution requires a supermajority for business to transact. And if you try to limit that, then you may have a problem. Now, the fact that the law existed doesn't mean that there's not a constitutional problem potentially, because maybe it wasn't challenged. But I think that you are definitely seeing an effort to punish the Democrats for their past effort and attempt to prevent the same kind of thing from happening again in the future.
Do you find it unusual that this effort starts in the state Senate when they're trying to punish the House Democrats?
Senator, President Pro Tem David Long, who is a Republican, seemed very emotional, I think, when all of this was going on. I think he personally feels like this was a big problem and was very eager to put something in place to prevent it from happening again. I also think starting it in the Senate sort of breaks it in more slowly. I think you might have seen a walkout in the House had it started there. But I did want to bring up a few things. One is that there were walkouts during the time when this law was in place. We think that there weren't some more than 3 days, but frankly, I'm not impressed with any of the research to determine what has really happened.
There's not much in the way of record keeping.
Part of the reason that some people on both sides think that law might have been repealed was because it, I think, was clearly unconstitutional. It charged lawmakers with a crime when the Constitution's clear they couldn't have been charged. And also the House and Senate both already have the power. They could have imposed $1,000 a day fines. They just didn't do it.
Right.
So I'm not sure this law allows for much of anything that isn't already permitted.
Okay, so there were reports filed this week. The Democratic Party, led by one Dan Parker, paid for hotel rooms in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. And now it's clear that you got campaign contributions from out-of-state unions that more than covered that. Is it fair to say that the out-of-state unions paid for the walkout?
Folks who looked at that didn't look at my federal report, where most of my individual contributions came in from. On average, it was a very small contribution. Do I always accept out-of-state union contributions? Yes. And I'm not going to apologize for that.
Did you get more this year than last
Accelerated.
Year? Accelerated. Okay. Nevertheless, State Republican Chairman Eric Holcomb is suggesting maybe something illegal took place here. He's using a little hyperbole, isn't he?
Well, I mean, the question, based on the new lobbying laws, the question is money being paid for out-of-state activities for legislators?
What am
I lobbying?
And
that's clearly against, we're lobbying clearly for the unions. The unions, now I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the unions may be paying.
But they didn't give it to the legislators. They gave
right.
it to Dan.
They may be paying him. So he can pay the bill so that they can stay over there to help protect union legislation. That's what this was all about.
This is the perfect example of why these campaign laws are so hard.
Well, that's true.
Right. There may have been an intent to do something,
right.
But I don't really think that necessarily in the end there'll be anything wrong.
It's hard to prove that, but I'm just telling you, the new campaign or the new lobbying laws clearly says you can't pay for out-of-state activity of legislators for the purpose of lobbying.
John.
What were they doing?
The ramifications of the walkout will continue to ring through future general assemblies. And I think it'll be interesting to see, because if you try to clamp this down, you just create more layers, more difficulty, and that's not a good thing.
That's the thing, is that this is a majority that's trying to become an absolute majority. And the right of the minority, it's enshrined in the Constitution. It's no different, Michael, than when a minority of U.S. senators can stop all action in the United States Senate. This has been enshrined. It'll be interesting to see if it passes, whether somebody challenges
Except
it.
Except that's part of the rules, the filibuster is. It's not part of the rules of the Indiana General Assembly.
Well, the Indiana General Assembly, yeah. It's in the Constitution that it requires 67.
The other part of this is that
it also slowed down the process so people could actually have a debate.
The laws
about
are trying to be passed now.
You were just trying to jam legislation down people's throats.
Would affect Republicans if you ever do get the majority back.
We're going to move on. A state Senate committee eliminated the governor's proposal this week for an automatic tax refund. It's all about what happens with the state budget surplus, and suddenly there is one.
We're here today to talk about an increase of $150 million in new money to fund K-12 education.
The two-year budget passed by this committee has small increases in education funding and ends up with $1 billion surplus. The governor says that when the surplus reaches 10%, or about $1.4 billion, the money should automatically go back to taxpayers. The chairman of this committee, Luke Kenley, has different ideas.
I personally am uncomfortable with
making a promise like that that I don't intend to fulfill every single year or in every case.
So the committee raised the trigger to 12%, but first it eliminated the tax refund.
And because I think the state needs to have a larger reserve account than just 10% to weather the bad times.
Instead, the money will go to unfunded teacher pensions. And Democrats on the committee have another idea. Spend the surplus first.
That we should take some of that money and put it back into some of the programs that have been hardest hit.
Dan Parker, does it make sense to argue about a proposal that will only take effect after Mitch Daniels leaves office?
Well, it was a gimmick to begin with. So I just hope that through all of this, I was glad to see what the Senate did with it. We need to learn a lesson from the last time we had surpluses. Hopefully we have them again. But, you know, we rushed to give it back in tax credits and this and that back. I mean, I remember the original tax rebate checks that a former House Speaker proposed, and your side laughed at it, but now you want to give them back automatically. We need to learn a lesson to make sure that we, restore funding cuts to education before we do anything else.
Maybe the biggest news here is simply the fact that Senator Luke Kinley is taking on the governor.
Go ahead.
Is it because he wants something else, or is it because he doesn't like this idea?
I spoke with Senator Kinley today, and Senator Kinley and Governor Daniels are in a total agreement on the principle of protecting as many taxpayer dollars as they can. The only difference in the way they approach this is that the governor wants to give it back incrementally as it becomes available immediately, where Kinley wants to pay off unfunded liabilities and give it back over the long term so that future generations don't have that debt. And Senator Kinley goes way out of his way, if you've ever been in his committees, and I know you have, over and over, to talk about how much he appreciates the fact that Governor Daniels goes out of his way to be a good steward of state taxpayer dollars. So they're not that far apart. Jeff Espick wants this back in the bill. There will be a conference committee on the budget. Believe me, there's going to be a lot of discussion about this in the final week of the session, so it's not over yet.
And the governor wrote a letter to every legislator this week explaining his desire to have it back in the budget. This is, as he's mulling a run for presidency, this is one of the lead talking points that he's used around the country.
This really does make you feel like that he's going to run. I mean, because he just seems to really want the taxpayer refund. It just sounds like the sort of automatic taxpayer refund. It's got a great ring to it. It's easy to understand. It is a perfect campaign idea if that's what he's going to do.
But a good one.
This is what it feels like. I mean, it very much feels like this is his idea for running for president.
Will the governor get it?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm guessing there'll be some form of hybrid, because I think Senator Kinley is very serious about these unfunded liabilities for pensions. It's an $11 billion unfunded liability in the teacher's pension that needs to be taken care of in the future. And every dollar you pay off now saves you many dollars in the future. So Senator Kinley really wants that. The governor really wants the tax rebate. I think you'll see a hybrid of some form that satisfies both of them.
We have a tradition of these rebates, if you will, in this state for a long, long time. I mean, I can remember us doing it in the 70s, again in the 80s, once or twice in the 90s.
You didn't want to do it because it was a Democratic
government.
Well,
we did it.
Then.
Republicans did it.
I know exactly.
Bob Ward did
it. I remember exactly what you're talking about.
Bob Ward did it. Otis Bowen did it.
Republicans did completely make fun of that. There's no doubt.
Well, they wanted to give $9 a person.
It was $100
a pizza.
But the part of the issue with this one that we're talking about now is, I mean, you could be $5 over and you're supposed to send refund checks. I mean,
But the other side of that is, I mean, the legislature's smart enough to know that if you spend a certain amount, you don't get yourself out of that
which
situation.
Which is part of the reason why this is...
Because they'll spend the money.
That's exactly
right.
That's right.
Okay, so which leads us to our weekly online poll question, an unscientific question that we do in conjunction with Ice Miller and their email and text alerts. This week's question, is an automatic tax refund a good idea or a political ploy? Your choices are A, good idea, B, political ploy, or C, both. Due to an error, We don't have results from last week's poll question. We will have results next week. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The state Senate gave its approval this week to a bill that would allow the governor to choose a replacement if Secretary of State Charlie White is removed from office as a result of a Democratic lawsuit. The vote was 33-17 to pass the bill. Opponents call Charlie's Law. Just the creation of the bill suggests that Republicans believe Charlie White's tenure as Secretary of State will be short. The embattled Secretary of State came to the Senate floor Tuesday when the bill was first eligible for a vote. He visited with Republican senators, including Mike Young, the author of the amendment that turned a routine election bill into Charlie's Law. Only Democrats argued against it.
It looks like a desperate attempt for the party to hold onto the office. You know, appearances count.
You are acquiescing to circumvent the intent of the Hoosier voters and the taxpayers of Indiana. I ask for your defeat of this bill based on that simple premise.
Senator Greg Taylor there, preceded by Senator Tim Lannon, John Kinzenberger. When's the last time you saw a power grab that blatant?
It was probably 1995 when they tried to take the redistricting from, or take the House from 100 to 99 members, and that caused a walkout, if you recall. This is pretty blatant, but it's also very interesting because if you think about it, obviously the Democrats are very upset about it, but this gives cover to the Republicans then on the Election Commission, the Recount Commission, to say, hey, we think he's unqualified to be the candidate, and they don't lose anything as a result. So, you know,
so this may not be done by people who are friends of Charlie White, is what you're saying.
Well, I don't think Charlie White has many friends on either side of the aisle at this point.
Do you see this one staying through the process?
I really don't know. It's been very hard to get folks to comment about it. It's been very hard to get Speaker Bosma to say what he thinks. I haven't heard anything about what the governor thinks about it. I'd be a little bit surprised if it stayed in there. There may be good reasons to change this law, but changing it in the middle of a process like this is certainly atypical of what the General Assembly usually does.
And it would beg for somebody to file a lawsuit actually got employed,
sure,
right?
Sure, I think that's a given. But I'm for it because I like the idea of trying to make either party, Democrats or Republicans, to make them out to be a non-major party. So to go through all the stuff you got to go through is ridiculous. And that's what this is all about, really.
That's part of what this is about for you.
You know it is.
No, it isn't.
Sure it is.
Your candidate was ineligible. Yeah. I filed this a long time ago.
And what I love about this is also he didn't say in there that he has to appoint a Republican.
He's going to go. Mitch Daniels is going to appoint a Democrat.
Well, do you think it's going to happen on Mitch Daniels' watch?
Well, let's get back to the facts, okay? Because he's just trying to take all the
time. It'll probably happen on the next governor's watch.
Let's give Dan a chance.
I think that this amendment itself shows that even the Republicans now believe that Charlie White is ineligible. They wouldn't have passed the beginning part of the amendment, Michael, if you didn't believe. Based on what the Recount Commission is going to have to do. If Eric Holcomb ever appoints a chairman to the Recount Commission, he sat on that for a while.
Well, he doesn't have to yet because Charlie White this week appealed the judge's ruling that calls for the Recount Commission to look at this, right? So now you got to wait until the repeal is.
Not necessarily. On Monday, I've asked my lawyers to go into the Marion Circuit Court and ask Judge Lou Rosenberg to take back control of this case because the state Republican Party chairman is just trying to run out the clock.
And you think you'll be successful?
Well, he gave strict instructions when he issued his order for this to be done expeditiously. It's now been 2 weeks, and we haven't heard anything from Eric Holcomb.
Is Eric Holcomb trying to run out the clock?
I have no idea what the timing on this is. When he says expeditiously, that doesn't mean it's on Dan Parker's time. It means it's on when the judge decides it's the right time.
You know what's unfortunate about all this court maneuvering and all of these things is you have to really start to wonder whether Charlie White, whatever you think of him and whatever you think, whether you think he should have been on the ballot or not, can really run an effective office given all of these things going on around him. And, I mean, I think that's a real policy question.
And it also points up, I think, the efforts that the Republicans, especially the governor, made between the election and before he took office to try to convince him not to take the office, because I think a lot of people could see this train wreck coming if he took office, and that's what's happened.
All right, the state Senate amended an abortion bill this week so that it would, among other things, take taxpayer money away from Planned Parenthood. It would also prohibit abortions past 20 weeks of pregnancy. Protesters who support Planned Parenthood demonstrated outside the Senate chamber to no avail. They argue that services provided by Planned Parenthood prevent abortion in many cases. It didn't stop the Senate from passing the bill on a 35-13 vote. The bill is likely headed to a conference committee. Leslie Weidenbender, the speaker, had some interesting comments about that bill later in the week. Will it survive?
I think it would be surprising if it didn't survive, frankly, because I think if you looked at the composition of the House Republican caucus, you're going to find that there are a lot of members of the Republican caucus who are going to want a provision like this. And I don't think it's, frankly, very surprising that they would be going after that. I think this is voters put these conservative Republicans in charge, and we'll see, you know, in a year and a half whether they're pleased with those results.
Well, the speaker says there are some constitutional questions about this potentially, and now we see that some of the people in the Daniels administration are saying that it could mean that the state would lose all federal family planning funds, $4 million worth.
I think that's where you'll start to see some concern over this. I think philosophically, the conservatives in the Republican Party and many on the Democrat side like the idea of further restricting abortion. But, you know, it's a dollar and cents issue also, and I think that's where some of the concern will come in. And it also is the collateral services that are provided. It's not just abortion that's being considered here. It's all of these family planning and health services for women that are affected. And so they're going to have to try to find a way to separate that, and that's the difficulty that they're having right now.
Well, and the argument has been that the birth control services provided by Planned Parenthood actually prevent abortion if you eliminate, and the Republicans say you can go to community health clinics, but if you can't, if that money's gone, then that changes this argument. But do you really think it changes the attitude of the Republicans?
No, because they don't care about access to quality health care for low-income women. This isn't about abortion. This is about access to health care and certain services that Planned Parenthood provides.
Don't you think it's about a philosophical viewpoint?
You know, less than 3% of Planned Parenthood's expenditures are related to abortion. And there are certain communities in this state where Planned Parenthood is the only access to quality health care for certain communities. And it's a shame. I was glad to see that the Secretary of FSSA said something today about the $4 million in Title X money. But I don't think the Republicans in the legislature care.
If this gets through the legislature, is it a veto candidate?
This is, first of all, he's absolutely wrong. This is all about abortion. And there is a large contingent of folks, both Republicans and Democrats, in the legislature who are anti-abortion. And that was proven out in the votes that have been taken. What the problem is, now that this part of the law has been included in this part of the law, there is going to be a problem of separation. And that separation, I think, before this is over, is probably going to take place. I think Leslie's right about that when it comes to the House. I think you will have an abortion bill passed, but I think there's going to be some separation here. And as I said on this show when we talked about this, when this passed
when
the House.
When you say separation, you mean the defunding Planned Parenthood
well,
part
I'm
will
talking
come
about
out?
Completely, probably, before it's over. And I think, as I said, I think Planned Parenthood provides some good information to a lot of people. But there are those who are absolutely offended that they help provide abortions at all.
If that
happens,
there has
to be a firewall placed there for people to find it's acceptable.
Right. But even if they don't defund Planned Parenthood, they'll still be able to claim that it's the strictest abortion law in the country.
Well, yeah.
Right. Finally, two friends from Southern Indiana are officially retired after claiming the April 6th $221 million Powerball prize. 32-year-old Darren Fox of Clarksville and 38-year-old Todd Reardon of Jeffersonville picked up their checks this week at Hoosier Lottery headquarters. They took the cash option and will each get about $40 million after taxes. Fox says he checked the numbers before heading to work.
I figured I always check in the mornings because I hate I wasn't going to work. And so, did you go to work that day?
No, sir.
What did you tell your boss?
Pardon? There's two of them.
What did you tell your boss when you
I took a vacation day. Still on vacation. After this, I'm probably not on more. Vacation.
No longer on vacation. Dan Parker, would you keep doing Indiana Week in Review if you were in their shoes?
You would never see me again.
State government should maybe start buying some Powerball tickets. Don't you think that?
I don't know. State government gets a pretty big chunk of this now. You know, a few years ago, the state legislature passed a law that we collect Indiana taxes off of.
Although I did see Catherine Dinsborn pulling that check back from the guy.
Pretty long odds on them winning the Powerball prize. Odds on a special session here as we go into the last week, are they longer than winning the Powerball prize?
That's a question for him.
any chance of a special session?
No.
None. That's what I say. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the Louisville Courier-Journal, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.